a new report by Concerned Health Professionals of New York and Physicians for Social Responsibility concludes that fracking is a public health crisis. That's not a surprise. It's the 9th edition of the document called The Compendium of Scientific, Medical, and Media Findings Demonstrating Risks and Harms of Fracking. It collects articles from peer-reviewed medical and scientific journals, investigative reports by journalists, and reports from or commissioned by government agencies. Sandra Steingraber is a biologist, author, senior scientist with the Science and Environmental Health Network, and lead author on the report. I had a chance to speak with her about it recently. What are some of the findings about the health risks of fracking for children and pregnant people?
So we have more than 120 studies now in the peer-reviewed scientific literature that have looked for and found serious health effects of fracking. And we don't have any studies that have looked for and not found them. And that's really extraordinary. I just want to begin with that. And of all of that data, the stuff on pregnancy is the strongest and the most corroborated across various states. And a lot of it does come from Pennsylvania. So we know that pregnant women who live near fracking sites, and by near, I mean within a few miles, not just like within 100 feet, but, you know, up to 4 or 5 miles, have higher risks for various things. Sometimes the data show smaller babies. And we know that when babies are born small, that usually means there's a problem with the placenta delivering nutrients. Babies are also born more premature to women who live near fracking and drilling operations, and sometimes they go on to have certain kinds of cancers. There's risk for leukemia. We've seen data from both Pennsylvania and Colorado on that. And now very strong data coming out of Pennsylvania showing that kids who live near fracking sites have 5 to 7 times the risk of lymphoma.
Seniors are also a population mentioned as at particular risk in areas with gas development. What is the study that stands out for you there?
We've got a couple of studies showing that seniors in Pennsylvania live less long. Their lives are actually shortened. And we can do this research because we've got Medicare data, right? Databases, and we know where the drill sites are located. And we see that older people tend to have more heart attacks and other kind of cardiovascular problems. If they do have heart failure, there's more hospitalizations for heart failure the closer you live to a fracking site and so forth. But one of the studies that I just really caught my eye was one that treated Pennsylvania as a kind of experimental group and New York State, where we banned fracking, as the control group, knowing that the line in between Pennsylvania and New York is just a line somebody drew across the map. It's not like a mountain range or anything. And so on one side of the line, we banned fracking in 2014. On the other side of the line, it's just gone gangbusters. And so in this study, we took a look at Medicare rolls and took a look at what was happening with people's health between 2002 and 2015. Now, around 2008, fracking just came roaring into that part of Pennsylvania, and that didn't happen in New York State. So what we see when we look at the data is that there's no difference in heart failure rates and other kinds of signs of health problems among older people prior to 2008. New York and Pennsylvania just chug along, just completely in tandem with each other. You can't see any differences. But then after fracking arrives, you see this big divergence where Pennsylvanians start to have more and more health problems, especially cardiovascular stuff, whereas in New York State, we continue to have less and less heart issues. And so you really do see a discrepancy between health outcomes based on whether or not fracking is permitted or prohibited in your community. And that is a kind of a stunning study, because normally it would be unethical behavior to do controlled experiments on people. We just don't do that intentionally. But in this case, it really kind of struck me, wow, we're running a kind of uncontrolled experiment on well, it is actually a controlled experiment if you're using New York as the control group, but the people of Pennsylvania are the lab animals. It has become, in my mind as a biologist, a moral issue, what's happening to the people of Pennsylvania at the hands of the oil and gas industry.
This edition also includes information about the use of gas stoves in homes. What are the main concerns, and why include gas stoves in this compendium?
Yeah, so with every issue of the compendium, and now there's 9 of them, we try to build out a new chapter. So we started it by just looking at fracking per se, just what was going on at the wellhead. And then we began to realize, wow, there's so many things going on downstream. There's the pipelines and the compressor stations and the flare stacks. there's gas-fired power plants and LNG terminals and things like that. We should really build out chapters on fracking infrastructure. So each year we choose another part of the fracking infrastructure and write a new chapter on that. So this year we chose gas appliances inside people's homes out of an awareness that, wow, really our own indoor airspace is the terminus of the fracking pipeline. So we know a lot about what happens when you release methane or burn methane in outdoor air. We see workers who work on the well pad sites have high levels of benzene in their urine, high enough to be linked to higher rates of leukemia. We see people who live along pipelines and near compressor stations exposed to things like benzene and formaldehyde and nitrogen dioxides. We see that people who live in communities where there are gas-fired power plants have much higher rates of nitrogen dioxide than other kinds of communities. And so now we can also say that we as private citizens living in our own homes are also, like the workers, like the people who live along pipelines and compressor stations, exposed to the byproducts of fracking because we're igniting that methane right in our kitchens and right in our basement. Now, if you're talking about hot water heaters or furnaces, building codes usually mandate that the emissions have to be vented to the outside air. Gas stoves are not required to be emitted to the outside air. Sometimes we have range hoods, but it's our choice whether we want to use them. Furthermore, they only work if you're only cooking on the back two burners of your stove, not the front two burners. And thirdly, a lot of them don't actually vent to the outside air. They just recycle the air, so it doesn't do anything to lower the contaminants in your home. So when we take a look at the data, and we have actually really good data going all the way back to the 70s, I was amazed at how many studies we have. You see over and over again that if you have a gas stove in your home, you have levels of nitrogen dioxide that would be illegal to breathe if you were in the outside air. And you have levels of benzene, which is another air pollutant that comes from gas stoves, inside your bedrooms, not even in the kitchen, but actually in your bedrooms, that remains hours after you finally turn the stove off after you're done cooking for the evening, right? And so nitrogen dioxide is a known cause of asthma, no doubt about it. Nitrogen dioxide is actually created, and it's not exactly a combustion byproduct the way benzene is. It's created when the heat of burning methane ignites the air around the flame so that the nitrogen and the oxygen in the air actually are forced to combine. And when you breathe that in, it's not very water soluble, so your nasal passages can't really protect you. It goes all the way down into the spongy alveoli, deep in your chest wall, where it turns into nitric acid. And there, that causes inflammation, it causes wheezing, and triggers the kind of spasmodicity that we see that is a cause of asthma. About 13% of all childhood asthma cases can be attributed to the presence of a gas stove in the home.
How should this compendium be used? Or how do you want it to be used?
I don't get asked that enough. So on a personal note, you know, I'm a PhD biologist who had a sort of whole career of writing books with my name authored on them and everything, which I kind of threw aside to be able to work on this compendium, which is kind of a nerdy project in a way, right? Because it just compiles all of the data that's otherwise locked away in the sort of obscurity of the peer-reviewed scientific literature, brings it all together in one place, and then translates it into plain spoken English so you don't have to be an expert in, you know, geochemistry or forestry or something to be able to understand and read this. And I have to say, of everything I've done or written, this has probably been the document that I'm the most proud of, because it's had the most actual effect that I can say, this helped ban fracking in New York. It went on to help ban fracking in Scotland. It played a role in stopping an LNG terminal in Ireland. And it was read and acted upon in Mexico and South Africa and in Argentina and so on. So it's a peer-reviewed, open access compilation of all the data that's fully searchable. And it just sits on our website rather than being, you know, published as a monograph in a peer-reviewed journal where you'd need a subscription. If you live near a fracking site and you're worried about air pollution, you can look that up. If you're trying to swap out your gas stove and need to go make a presentation before your church group, you can look that part up and so on. So none of this is copyrighted. So we just want people to use it to write to their elected officials, make public comment. If, you know, a pipeline is going through your community, you can stand up and use all of the data from the pipeline chapter, write letters to the editor, use it as a libretto for an opera. You know, it's just there as a kind of big encyclopedia and a living document that's up to the minute that people can use for whatever part of the oil and gas extraction and use big octopus that people are confronting and need information about.
Sandra Steingraber is a biologist, author, senior scientist with the Science and Environmental Health Network, and lead author on the 9th edition of the Compendium of Scientific, Medical, and Media Findings, Demonstrating Risks and Harms of Fracking. There's a link at our website, alleghenyfront.org.